All right, thank you, one and all. Let's take our Bibles and turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 10. Those of you joining us today, we are journeying through the book of Ecclesiastes, and we're getting toward the end now. We're in the 10th chapter of Ecclesiastes. And while you're turning, let me just tell you how good it is to see you. I tell you, if the Lord would be pleasing to give me no more scheduled trips to Dallas, it'll be all right with me. I tell you that. We arrived Monday afternoon, Brother Perry and I, and got our rental car. And when we got over into the thick of things, I remembered the words of Dorothy on The Wizard of Oz when she said, "We're not in Kansas." I said, "We're not in Onslow County anymore." It was very intimidating to this country boy to see one overpass with another overpass with another overpass with another overpass. I said, "Oh my soul." Perry was the navigator. He kept his phone hot. We still missed turnoffs, and you'd go 10 miles out of the way to get back through all that maze of asphalt. You know, the expression, the asphalt jungle. It is real. And so it is indeed a joy to be back with you in this sane country that we have. You know, we think we have traffic issues every now and then. You're just waiting. That's all you're doing. Over there, you're wandering around. I said, "Perry, could you imagine releasing a 16-year-old to drive in this place?" Could not for my life imagine that. Well, they say Texas likes things big. But Solomon in Ecclesiastes 10 is going to illustrate with something very small and something that stinks. He's going to illustrate with a dead fly. Now, we're in the time of the year of the sultry weather. Have you ever had it happen? A mouse dies trapped in the wall of your house. If you've never had that to happen, I hope you don't miss out on that before you leave this world. We've sure had it to happen. They get that, you know, you put out the poison. We have a crawl space under our house, and so we'll put out some poison to get rid of, and it will get rid of them. But every now and then, one does not get out. And you just have to endure. You spray the air freshener and all that. You're trying to cover that smell of death. And it indeed is a bad smell. Of course, this time of year, you can be going down the road to and something expired the other day. And you know it. You know it. You know, it's over there in the ditch or something or another. In fact, the first time I was mowing our ditch, the first time this year I was mowing, I was going along and all of a sudden I stepped in something soft. Yeah. Yeah. It'll put a giddy up in your step. I tell you that. It'll cause you to move. But something that is dead, something that stinks. But then he's also illustrating with something that is very, very small. He's going to use a fly to make an illustration. And you know, something small can do a lot of harm. Years back, my wife Sophie and I traveled with her family to Hillsville, Virginia. We went up there at least twice. And the process, I met some folks from a church. Now, what happens at Hillsville, Virginia, it was the weekend of Labor Day. It's just a giant yard sale. In fact, the first time I saw it, it reminded me of the tent cities that our military folks will set up sometimes overseas to accommodate the refugees. You'll just see this massive tent city. And that's kind of the way it was. And you can buy things from treasure to trash. I'm telling you, there's antiques, and yet there's just folks, you can tell it, they're just getting rid of stuff from their own homes, you know. It's all kind of stuff. But in the process, of course, there's the vendors, people selling things to eat. And I came upon this church from Galax, Virginia, and got to know them a little bit, and they were selling barbecue. Now, not Eastern barbecue, no. it has a little different sauce to it, but nonetheless, good. And so I began to talk to them, and I learned the reason for their selling the barbecue. That they had lost all their buildings except the fellowship hall to termites. It had got in and so devastated that their buildings were not usable, and they were having to replace their buildings because of, it wasn't a tornado, you know. It wasn't something devastating we think of like a hurricane or anything like that or a fire. a tiny little termite. One webpage says that termites range from a quarter to a half an inch in length. Now, the queen and king, they can get big, almost over 1 inch long. And interesting, another webpage says termites cost U.S. property owners over $5 billion each year. Around 600,000 residential homes are affected annually. The average cost to repair termite damage is $3,300. One small termite colony of 60,000 can eat a 2x4 in 5 months. Scientists believe that most termites eat 2 to 3% of their body weight each day. Now, some of us, our wives might want to call us termites. I don't know, all right? It says even that some termites, now this is the webpage, can chew through asphalt, plaster, lead, and mortar. And just as little tiny termites can do great damage to a structure, so too can things that we might consider to be small matters in our lives do great harm. And a number of you are reading Paul David Tripp's daily devotional, Morning New Mercies. Just yesterday, here's a portion of his devotion. He said, "The little moments of your life are profoundly important precisely because they're little moments that happen to be the address where you live. Think about it this way. The character of any person's life is not shaped by 2 or 3 grand big moments of everyday life. It's the character that is formed in 10,000 little mundane moments of everyday life. It's the character that is formed in those little moments of life that determines how you think and respond in the few big moments of life that you encounter." You may recall that the same human author of Ecclesiastes, Solomon, that he wrote in the Song of Solomon about the little foxes. And he says, they're the ones that spoil the vines. So those little pups have great potential for doing harmful things. In Ecclesiastes chapter 10, you will see that the little foxes, the termites, if you please, is the matter of foolishness. The whole chapter is devoted to this devastating effect of foolishness. And so I've titled this today, "The Stench of Foolishness." He's going to speak to the leader, the person of influence. He will then speak to the laborer, the person at work. He will speak about our lips, our words. And finally, he will address the matter of the land, our society, and the effect of foolishness. Let's look now, Ecclesiastes chapter 10, and let's read the verses 1 through 7. "Dead flies putrefy the perfumer's ointment and cause it to give off a foul," that is a stinking odor, a stench. "So does a little folly," foolishness, "to one respected," that is to one in reputation for wisdom and honor. "A wise man's heart is at his right hand." Now, sorry to you left-handed folks, all right? But the thinking of that day and the analogy being used here, the left hand, that of strength or of dexterity and your ability and everything, that the right hand was regarded as that of the greater use and ability. And so that's why he speaks like this. "A wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart at his left. Even when a fool walks along the way, he lacks wisdom, and he shows everyone that he's a fool. If the spirit of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your post, for conciliation pacifies great offenses. There is an evil I have seen under the sun, as an error proceeding from the ruler. Folly is set in great dignity, while the rich sit in a lowly place. I have seen servants on horses, while princes walk on the ground like servants." So let's stop there now. He's addressing people in leadership. Now, as I was pondering this chapter, And I thought, now last Sunday, chapter 9, it served us well as we were recognizing our graduates. And yet chapter 10 here helps us even today as we think of Father's Day, because Dad, you're a leader. You have a measure of influence upon your son or upon your daughter, grandparents, granddaddies. So again, and so he's addressing here the leader, and he's going to say to you and to me, foolishness disgraces the leader. And first of all, you have the reputation there in verse 1 of this leader. He is a person of position, of influence. Solomon says he has a reputation for wisdom. And he's held in honor. He is esteemed. People respect this man. And yet, sadly, at some point and in some manner, he is found to be foolish. I think maybe we may have witnessed something like that in recent days in our convention of an individual who was held in esteem and honor, and it's yet to be fully determined, but the allegations at least, that this man of great esteem, I have had high regard for him. But if the allegations are proven to be true, then there were occasions where he has proven himself, though he still has those other traits, but he has proven himself to be foolish. You know, the Bible says we're to walk in wisdom. Now, how do we walk? A step at a time. And you know, it only takes one step to do something dumb. You ever stumped your toe? 1:30 in the morning going to the bathroom? You probably took 500 steps that day, or ever how many you take in a day's time. But that one step, man, it was painful, wasn't it? Well, that's really a light matter compared to what Solomon's addressing, but it is that we walk by wisdom, or we're instructed to walk by wisdom, and yet it only takes but a step, a stumble of foolishness that can bring disgrace even to a leader. And so he gives now the leader's examination in verse 2, because he begins to speak about his heart, the heart of the leader. Because he says in verse 2, a wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart at his left. And of course, God is always aiming for the heart. He's always aiming for the heart. You see, man-made religion is satisfied with just the external. If we can get performance and conformity. But God always aims for the heart. God starts with the heart and he works out. And so here we look at the heart of a person, the heart of this leader. And we find the Bible calls it a fool's heart. Even though he may be in a place of respect and recognition, the fact is he possesses now a fool's heart. What is something about a fool's heart or foolishness? Well, for one thing, foolishness lacks concentration on the right things. Foolishness just runs after really insignificant things instead of what would be the right subjects, the right topics, the right things that we ought to be giving our focus to, but rather we're letting our minds run after trivial stuff. That's foolishness. It lacks concentration. But also foolishness lacks appreciation for the important things, the things that really value, have value, the things of virtue, the things of moral strength and goodness. But foolishness, no. Foolishness prefers more of the cotton candy subjects of life. It just goes after things that are absolutely minor. And sadly, foolishness also lacks consideration of eternal things. That which ought to be on our minds frequently is that we are but a breath. We are but a step away from the realm called eternity. Every one of us. I had the funeral Friday for our dear friend, Mr. P.B. Edwards. After the funeral, I was talking to his sister. Mr. P.B. had the terrible fall. He stumbled on February the 24th. She said February the 23rd, that evening, he was in her home sitting with her and her husband in their home. He was speaking about his desire to attend the funeral the next day where he would have that fall that would be so devastating to his health. But there he was the day before. He said, I can see him sitting in that chair, and he's talking about his desire to go to the funeral of his friend. And yet not knowing the next day, he would stumble in that parking lot and have a terrible fall that would damage his head, break his neck. And for over 3 months, he would lie in a hospital before finally the Lord took him home. You see, morally speaking, spiritually speaking, you and I need to appreciate more the next moment we could be in the presence of our Maker. It is a solemn reality. There is no guarantee of tomorrow. But foolishness discounts that kind of stuff. Foolishness just wants to be lighthearted. Foolishness just wants to play. Foolishness just wants recess. Foolishness does not see anything serious about this life. So Solomon said, you know what? As a dead fly in the perfume, as it defiles it, as it ruins it, he said, you know, so is foolishness with an individual who is supposedly a person to be respected, to be looked up to be followed, to be imitated, and yet they're like that. That they're people of foolishness. It's just skippity-doo-dah. It's just a lackadaisical approach to life. There are no heavyweights in their way of thinking. It's all light, fluffy, like clouds. You know, we were up there 30,000 miles. That just gets overwhelming after a while. You get up there, this thing is actually flying. This thing is actually, and you look out there and I said, Perry, it looks like just fluffs of cotton, doesn't it? Just drifting by. I say to you, unfortunately, there are a lot of daddies today who need to get much more serious about life. I do not mean by this, I do not mean, and the Bible does not mean by this, that there is not to be a smile on your face, there is not to be a spring in your step, that you're all to be downcast and just a drudgery about. No. But that you do look at life honestly. You look at life for what it truly is, and you look at the matter of God in your life with a great deal of measure. That it does matter in your life. Foolishness will disgrace the leader, and that's what you have in verse 5 and 7. From the examination and the reputation, you have his humiliation. And look how he summarizes it. He says in verse 7, servants are on horses while princes walk on ground like servants. What has happened? The leader has been what? Dethroned. He has been embarrassed. He has been humiliated. The servant is now on the horse. He is walking. You see the picture? That's what it's about. That foolishness can bring that about in your life. It is time to wake up. It's time to get serious. You remember Jonah in his rebellion, his disobedience? The Bible says how that when God revealed his will to him, it was not Jonah's will, was it? So Jonah sought to run from the presence of the Lord. Anybody knows right then, bad decision, right? That's not going to work out good, buddy. That's just not a good choice. But he did that. He gets on that ship, the storm comes, and what is Jonah able to do? He went to sleep. He went to sleep. Do you remember Jesus talking about the wheat and the tares? And you remember he said, while men slept, what? The enemy came in. Oh, I wonder how much application that has in our homes today. While daddies are sleeping, while daddies are being foolish, the enemy comes in and sows those poisonous seed, the tares. Let me ask you, Daddy, are you being wise? Are you? Are you being wise? Or are you being foolish? It will disgrace you in some manner at some time. Foolishness disgraces the leader. Then in verses 8 through 11, he turns to the laborer. And he's going to point out how that foolishness distracts the laborer. Now Solomon here is not teaching that you're not to work. That's not what his point is. His point is because the subject is foolishness. And its ramifications upon the leader, but now upon the laborer, the worker. And he's going to point out how that foolishness, this lighthearted approach, how that it's going to cause trouble for him. It's distracting him from the attention he ought to be giving to his work. So look at verse 8. He who digs a pit will fall into it. And whoever breaks through a wall will be bitten by a serpent. He who quarries stones may be hurt by them, and he who splits wood may be endangered by it. If the axe is dull and one does not sharpen the edge, then he must use more strength. But wisdom brings success. A serpent may bite when it is not charmed. The babbler is no different. What is he saying here about this matter of work, of labor? Well, it comes down basically just to two things as I see it. One, foolishness fails to use caution. He said, here's somebody digging a hole. He falls in it. He says, here's somebody breaking through a wall. And very likely this is a hedge. And yet there is a snake down there in the shrubbery. He says, or somebody is out quarrying, digging stones, or splitting wood, and they're injured by this. You see, this foolishness does not exercise caution. Now, Derek, he works for one of our utilities. He works with those power lines, you see. He's the one you love to see when the power goes off. You have a hurricane, you know, and the power's off for a few days. I guarantee you have never, you probably had never thought about sending a thank you note to Jones Onslow or the other company. I can't keep their name. We have Jones Onslow, all right? But I guarantee you don't ever think about sending them a thank you note. But I tell you what, that day comes, man, they're your hero, right? They're going to get the power turned back on, and the surge of electricity is going to come back, and that glorious stuff called air conditioning is going to come back on, right? Oh, aren't you thankful for the providence of God? You were born during the era of air conditioning. You could have been born 100 years ago, right? Of course, you'd been ignorant to it. You wouldn't know any different. But we know the difference, don't we? We like it. But let me ask you something. Do you think you're going to look out there, and them guys on those poles, and they got a glove and a hand, and one of them's got a ball, and while one's up there on the pole connecting back, getting that, I don't know how high a voltage it is, running again to your house, they're throwing the ball back and forth. Or he's up there with a slingshot and seeing if he can hit a squirrel in a tree, you know. You know what I'm saying? You think you want to look out and see them playing? Do you think you are? What do you think? Let's take a vote. No, they're not. They're not. Man, they have got to treat that seriously, right? They got to. The importance of what they're doing demands carefulness, right? Now, you hope and pray, don't you? You hope and pray that if the anesthesiologist puts you to sleep and that surgeon walks in that room and's got that sharp scalpel, that knife to cut you open, do you want him to be serious? Do you want him cracking jokes within those in the operating room with? No. You want him to give total attention to you, right? Sure you do. You want him to be very, very careful. In fact, I was just told this morning, our dear friend, Miss Chico Johnson, she suffers with so much lower back pain, and they'll give her a shot. They gave her one, I don't know, must have been a couple of months ago, and it really helped her. She went recently for another one, and the doctor injected her in the wrong place. So it's not helping her. It's a sad thing. Not only did it not help her, but because of the injection, the chemicals, she can't have another one even in the right place for now. You see, being careful is important, isn't it? And I tell you what we witnessed this week on 30 and 35 numbers of interstates coming out of Dallas, woo, I thought I was not going to see Sophie Gale. I tell you that, because people, I had a guy, there was some construction, and he just thanked the Lord, thanked the good. And when we got to the rental, by the way, it was just a blessing of the Lord. I had reserved something like a Jeep, you know, SUV and something. And we walk out, and the lady just turned to me and said, "You want a truck?" Gave me a full-size truck. I was glad of that. I'd have taken a Hummer if I'd have known what I was about to drive in that traffic. Because you know why? Not everybody was cautious. Not everybody was. It was like they were on their own little world, and the only thing that mattered was their agenda, and they did not care. And they would, I mean, just do crazy things. I thought of the old John Denver song, "Take Me Home, Country Road." I thought, man, get me out. But you see, it's this foolishness, and really it's this foolishness that fails to use caution. Why does a man who stood in an auditorium like this, on a platform like this, and look at the woman beside him and a minister standing here saying to her, "I promise you, I will be faithful. I promise you, forsaking all others. I promise you, I will cling to you. I promise you, no one, nothing will ever come between us." Why does that man one day violate that? Why? At some point, he stopped being cautious. Solomon says, just as the laborer is careless in digging the pit, he falls in it. Just as the man who is splitting the wood is not being careful, and perhaps the axe misses and the axe hits his leg, the chip flies up, hits him in the face. Something happens. He's not being careful. I ask you men today, are you being careful? Are you? We live in a world that is full of landmines, that is full of traps, that is full of danger. Talking about where he talked about the man going through that wall or through that hedge, and there's the serpent. See, I grew up in the country. I live right next door to where I was raised, and it was always woodland behind us. And us boys, we always liked to live and play in the woods. But basically, yeah, we just about lived it. We loved to play in the woods. We had a sawdust pile that was established there long before my time. And you know, back then it seemed like a mountain, but really it was just a hill. But I mean, it, I don't know, 7 or 8 foot high. But we'd love to get on the top of it, and you know, just get sawdust all over you playing in the woods. But you know what? Daddy always said, "Boys, look where you put your step." Why? Snake. Danger. Ask you, men. Ask you, are you? Are you being careful? Do you remember David in 2 Samuel 11? He did not have to leave home to get in trouble, and you don't either. All you got to do is turn on that computer. Are you being careful, really? Or are you being foolish? Are you toying with danger? Do you have boundaries? Do you? Do you put up boundaries in your life? Or do you just fly lickety-split down the hill and give no thought to what you might be doing to yourself morally, or to your family, to your marriage, to your children? It's real, beloved. This is the tragedy that happens day after day after day after day. Solomon says foolishness fails to use caution, but also foolishness fails to make preparation. And there he talked about the guy splitting wood. He says, you know what? He doesn't take time to what? Sharpen the axe. So he's out here just banging away with a dull axe trying to split wood. Now in that day, and some of you even still can connect with it, but my parents' generation, you know, splitting wood, that wasn't an occasional thing you did just for the fun of it. I mean, that was a part of life. That was to heat and to cook with. And some of you grew up on the farm. You remember when they used wood even for the curing of tobacco. So it was an important part of life, wasn't it? It was a big demand. It wasn't just one time, but it was throughout the year that you do this. Well, how foolish it would be to go unprepared to do that important task. Do you go out unprepared? Do you live your life unprepared? You know, the Bible talks about how that we're to live our life with an attire. There's a clothing we're to wear. What's it called in Ephesians chapter 6? Do you know? That we're to put on the whole armor of God. And the Bible there is very, very clear about this, that if you're going to be able to stand in the, what kind of day does it call it? Does anyone know? In the evil day. That if you're able to stand in the evil day, it says you must put on the whole armor of God. So in other words, you're to prepare yourself for the engagement, because you have an enemy, right? You have an enemy, male, female, we all have an enemy. And we need to recognize that. And we must respect the enemy to the point of recognizing he is sinister. He is evil. He is plotting. He is stalking. He is seeking. And we are fools if we go out onto the combat field and we are not dressed appropriately, if we are not prepared. Put on the whole armor of God. The Bible talks about how that we're to submit ourselves to God and draw nigh to God, and that God would then draw nigh to us, that God will lift us up, that God will help us. Well, are we doing that? Are we seeking God? Are we submitting to God? Or are we acknowledging our need of God? Are we? Or are we just going out boldly and with a cockiness that we can? Are you prepared? Are you prepared? You have not a clue to what the enemy may have already strategically prepared for you this week. At work, you have no clue of how the enemy, men, let's just get frank, let's just be honest, let's just be plain and blunt of a flirtation that may be coming your way this week. Let me ask you, are you prepared? Is there a day-by-day recognition of a dependency upon God? That in myself I can capitulate, I can yield, that there is that beast within me that would respond to that flirtation with some degree of like and enjoyment and desire. And yet there's a recognition that is nothing more than a poisonous meal that the enemy is putting before me to destroy me. Foolishness, foolishness distracts the laborer. Number three, verses 12 through 15. Foolishness discredits the lips. He's talking now about our words. In verse 12 through 15, the words of a wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of a fool shall swallow him up. The words of his mouth begin with foolishness, and the end of his talk is raving madness. A fool also multiplies words. No man knows what is to be. Who can tell him what will be after him? The labor of fools wearies them, for they do not even know how to go to the city. And that's just kind of a slam on them of their ignorance. What in the world would we draw from here about the words of foolishness? Well, I think for one thing in verse 12 and through 14 that he's telling us foolishness communicates no confidence. You're not going to trust this guy. You'll put no confidence in him. That his words are empty. You know, it was said at a time that there was a time in this country. Well, how did it go? A man's word. Yeah, his bond. And Solomon says, you know, such a man has no credit, or he has no credibility. Proverbs 15:2 puts it this way: the tongue of the wise uses knowledge aright, but the mouth of fools pours out foolishness. Should people have a reason to take you at your word? When you say something to them, should they say, good, done, done? I don't have time to tell you our little episode this past week of hotels. We had to change hotels. But when we did, I had to make reservations at another hotel. And I was doing it by phone. And so, we have a credit card here at the church I get to use. And so I was going to reserve that second hotel on that card by way of phone. And the man said, no, said, you've got to use the one that's got your name on it. So I said, okay, I'll use mine. I'll get, you know, reimbursed later. And so Thursday morning when we were checking out early, I told the man, I said, look, I need a hard copy. I want a receipt so I can submit it. He runs off something, gives me a paper. I don't even bother to look at it. I get home, I open up, look at it. He gives me a copy of where somebody else had canceled their reservation. It had their name. It had nothing to do with me, nothing at all to do with me. Okay? So I get on the phone and I called the hotel back in Grand Prairie, just outside of Dallas, Texas. And I tell the guy, he says, no problem. He said, I'll send you a note. If you don't have it in 15 minutes, call me back. I let 30 minutes go by. Didn't come. I called him back. Okay, I'll send you a note. To this day, I have not yet got that copy yet. I think I'm just going to write him a letter and just mail it. Anybody going to Dallas, Texas in the next few days, let me know. All right? Now, I don't know. Maybe there's a technical difficulty there with them, and they're just having a problem. I don't know. But all I know is it would be very hard for me right at this moment to take that man's word. All right? He keeps telling me what he's going to do, and it has not yet happened as of last time I checked my email. All right? No confidence. But also, hear me, no comfort. No comfort. A fool has no words of comfort for a person who's hurting. Because the fool speaks lightly. Now, I've got to tell you, these 34 plus years of pastoring, I've witnessed times where I've seen folks, I wish they would just either leave or be quiet in the presence of people who are hurting. Babbling tongues are not needed with hurting people. They don't need lengthy sermons. Now's the time to be lengthy, all right? But not then, not at that moment. They just need somebody who cares and can whisper a word. I have witnessed it, Lord. And the Lord knows I have seen it in hospitals and homes, times of sorrow and suffering. Words are just tossed out so just carelessly. You can take the word of God and use it carelessly. No comfort when a foolish person is speaking. Well, let me wrap it up. Verse 16 through 20. Foolishness defiles the land. He looks now across the landscape at the society and the effect of such traits, whether it be with the leadership or with those who labor. If it's the talk of the times, look at how he puts it now in verse 16 through 20. Woe to you, O land, when your king is a child, and your princes feast in the morning. Blessed are you, O land, when your king is the son of nobles and your princes feast at the proper or due time for strength and not for drunkenness. Because of laziness, the buildings decays, and through idleness of hands, the house leaks. A feast is made for laughter and wine makes merry, but money answers everything. That's the thinking now of such foolishness. Do not curse the king even in your thought. Do not curse the rich even in your bedroom. For a bird of the air may carry your voice. You ever heard the expression, a little bird told me? And a bird in flight may tell the matter. What in the world is Solomon saying to us here? Well, for one thing, foolishness is wasteful. It's wasteful. It promotes immaturity. He gives a picture of a child being the king. And that it's a child, and they're childish in their ways. And so foolishness, that's not a trait of maturity. That's not growing up. Remember what Paul said in describing maturity? 1 Corinthians 13. He said, when I was a child, what? I spake as a child. I thought I was a child. Yeah. I have, to this day, I love to hear 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old girls giggle. I do. I think it's a God-given trait. Girls, little girls ought to giggle, all right? Little boys ought to be little boys with some mischievous thoughts about them and things in their pockets, you know. Little Nolan the other day was walking around here the whole time he's walking around. I thought, what has he got in his pocket? You know, the whole time, just like that. He wouldn't take his hand out of his pocket. But let me tell you something. It's a different thing when you're an adult, supposedly. It's time to grow up. And so Paul said, but when I became a man, I put away childish things. Now, hear me, Daddy. I think it's very appropriate for you to get down on the floor and wrestle with your boy, all right? You better do it while you can because they will grow up, all right? Seize the moment, all right? I told my 16-year-old grandson the other day, I said, I don't know if I can whip you anymore, but I'll give you a hard time, all right? So I'm not saying you don't play with your youngest. Don't misunderstand me. But there is that about you now that needs to be mature. We need mature men and women. We need that. But foolishness promotes immaturity. Foolishness promotes irresponsibility. He speaks about the house decaying. There's been no maintenance. No care given. Foolishness is wasteful. And then foolishness also is worrisome. Did you note that last verse? He uses that language here. He says, you better be even careful about your thinking. Now, it's kind of like a thought patrol here. Because he says the birds of the air may carry it. Well, you know, we've got something today called Twitter. And isn't it amazing that things get spread on that? And by the way, if you're caring to run for office in the next 100 years, I suggest you be careful what you put on Twitter, all right? If I I got back from the convention and got home. My wife said, I heard Beth Moore was running for president. I come to the church that evening. Well, on Friday, come to the church on Friday, and somebody approached me. I heard Beth Moore was running for president of the convention. Her name was not even mentioned at the convention. I don't know how in the world where it got started. Two men, that's all, just two. One was elected, all right? It's amazing how that stuff gets flying around. Let me ask you, are we foolish or are we wise? And I don't know of any area where foolishness is more indicated than in our choices, what we choose. And Solomon said, it's like a little fly, a dead fly. So often those choices are not major moments. It's just the discipline and the practice of it, day by day, of the choices we make. And you know, as parents, the choices we make send a signal to our son and daughter. Our choices say to them, this is what is important. This is what matters. A number of years ago, I heard Dr. Jerry Vines, who was then pastor in Jacksonville, Florida, say, hard choices are part of our spiritual development. Sometimes I think parents try to protect their children from having to make tough choices. Now, inappropriate to their age, but they need to make choices. They need to learn to make good choices. We're in a day of carelessness about this matter. And even in the church, I watch parents who make choices about things, and it breaks my heart because I said, don't you realize you are sending a message to your son and daughter? This is what is important. This is what is the priority now in our lives. And I think that is so dangerous that you're sending that signal. Are we wise? Or is there a stench, a smell of foolishness? Are you wise today? Jesus spoke of the wise and the fools, those who were prepared, those who were not. Let me ask you, do you know Jesus as your Lord and Savior? Have you trusted Him? Are you saved today? There's wisdom when you own yourself a sinner and believe on the Lord Jesus Christ. If that has never happened in your life, I pray today you will believe on God's Son to be your personal Savior. Let's bow together in prayer.